This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebrand and Safety. This week, we're talking to a tech company that made social distancing devices and now has pivoted to create something that's really exciting. Let's jump into the intro. I'll tell you some more about it. Let's go.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution or one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Blue.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit subscribe, hit the bell, all of that stuff. My name's James McPherson, I'm from Risk Fluent Limited, and Rebranding Safety is our purpose as a company. So thank you very much for joining us on this journey. It's lovely to have you with us. Today we're talking to a gentleman called Ronan Finnegan. He created a device to help us all socially distant, a nudge for social distancing, so to speak. But then all of a sudden, that became something that's not really needed. So what do you do? Well, if you're an entrepreneur, you pivot, don't you? And he did. And it's really interesting to see what they're doing. So we get him on to talk all about what he's doing. And I'm mega excited to watch what he and the team at Spaceband can do. So let's jump into our conversation with Ronan. Welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. No worries. Do you want to introduce yourself and then we'll get cracking?
Sure, yeah. I'm Ronan Finnegan. I'm one of the co-founders at Spaceband. So, yeah, I mean, we're making wearable tech for health and safety is the long and short of it.
Cool. Tell me, I kind of know the story of Spaceband, but it's a fascinating story. Like how did Spaceband start? Tell that like beginning story, because I think it's fascinating. And then we'll kind of really get into it from there.
Yeah, by all means. I've been an entrepreneur since leaving school. I'm 27 now. I've done it for 9-10 years. And naturally, yeah, I mean, a variety of projects have often come my way. I've done many of my own projects, but often I've had friends come to me with ideas of, hey, I've got this thing. Can you help me do it? Because the nature of what I've been doing for the last number of years. Anyway, I had a text from one of my childhood best friends, Harry, in March 2022, just when all the COVID outbreak stuff was happening. And the text, I remember it still so clearly, was, I have this idea for a social distancing device because no one's keeping to the rules. So at the time, I had other business commitments, but effectively dropped them all. And Harry equally dropped all. He had a job at the time and started working on this project. So in its first iteration, Spacebands were a COVID wearable. It was a device that beeped and vibrated to alert users to step away from each other effectively. And then it would store that contact tracing data so that you could utilize the information to decipher whether or not a person with a positive COVID test has been in contact with a variety of other people. So when we started the business, the whole concept was initially around schools. Sounds very Black Mirror at the time, but all of the media was really showing like concern about schools returning and obviously kids catching COVID. So we weren't trying to use this as kind of a behavioral support tool. Really, we were just trying to keep these kids safe when we first started making the device. So Harry and I kind of ideated around this concept. And within 6 weeks, we went from a concept to a product. And then from there, extended into a mobile application that would track contact tracing logs and customize settings, the distance and the type of alert and all that sort of stuff. But we started trying to sell into schools, and we kind of thought it was either going to be the $1 billion idea, we were going to sell it to every single school in the country, or it was going to be a slow burner. Now, naturally, we contacted all the state schools and the council boards, but it was such a slow process that we figured by the time we end up getting through to the decision makers, COVID's going to disappear. At that time, we all sort of anticipated that COVID might be a 2-month or 3-month process. Obviously, it went on for a lot longer, but no one really knew how long it was going to last when we first started doing this. So we contacted, we started going after the private schools then, and we had some big interest from a number of the biggest private schools in the UK. I won't say names just because I don't know where I stand in terms of whether or not I'm allowed to say that. But yeah, we had some interest, but inevitably we had no sales come in. However, we had this live website of this social distancing device up, And we were getting people landing in our inbox saying like, hey, this is really cool technology. Like, I'd love to use it for my business. Most of these companies who were contacting us were logistics providers or food manufacturers, businesses that couldn't stay closed regardless of government guidelines, because inevitably they had to keep staff on site because otherwise the whole supply chain would fall apart. We'd have no food in the supermarkets and that sort of thing. So we quickly realized, without even really going after a target market, that this was a business product as opposed to a product for school children. So we sort of changed our positioning overnight. We went from this whole big, bright school, kind of, this is a nice, lighthearted way of not being told off. That was kind of the main angle for the product in its first version. It was so that teachers weren't shouting at kids to stay apart. It was kind of a nice alert, as horrible as that sounds now that I'm looking back at it.
Yeah, but
it was a polite way to tell them to move apart from signs getting screamed at. But yeah, we repositioned and went after the business angle. We started the branding, kind of had factory floors on the websites and construction sites, and it all felt like it was a business play. Now, the second we did that, kind of the business just went on some crazy trajectory. Like, to cut a long story short, in our first year, we sold 25,000 products to over 1,000 businesses. We turned over £500,000 as a team of two working in a bedroom selling this wearable. We kind of had never anticipated that it was going to go as well as it did. But yeah, I mean, we were the cheapest option on the market while still being a completely cohesive and effective way of monitoring social distancing. We had no data collected on our devices. In a sense, we had no personal data, no employee information. So lots of companies who are looking to implement the devices were able to do so without fears of a third party, i.e. Spacebands or another social distancing company, tracking and storing their data. So for that reason, we won contracts with Sony, Panasonic, Amazon, the NHS used our devices in their business services, the MOD used our devices in their barracks.
Wow.
We had Travis Perkins, British American Tobacco, lots of the kind of the biggest manufacturing and construction sites in the UK. And then naturally from there, expanded into international markets. So we sold into 30 different countries in our first year. And we were, I mean, as inevitably, when a business is growing that quick, the media kind of get traction of it. So we were featured on BBC News, featured on Sky News, featured on Apple News. We were like on the iPhone home screen for a while. Martin Lewis wore our devices on his show. We went viral on Twitter. Well, Tweety did. Jimmy Fallon wore our devices on his show because we had a contract with the US ITV production site. So all the like camera operators and stuff on his show were wearing the devices. So we were just kind of, it was all growing exponentially. But inevitably we knew that COVID angle was going to disappear because the product was only as good as, I mean, it seems again strange to say, but the product was only as good as government guidance.
Hmm.
The second government said that COVID wasn't a thing anymore, we knew that product wouldn't have a use case. And naturally, being young entrepreneurs, we were also not willing to just be pushing a COVID product when inevitably we wanted our lives to return back to normal as well. So we didn't want to be ringing up, making cold calls, telling people they should be full pro COVID when everything else was saying that it was okay.
Yeah.
So we asked our customers what they wanted to see us do next. Now, naturally, the customers of that product were the health and safety managers from these big organizations, because they were the people who were keeping people safe within COVID. It was either the C-suite execs or it was the health and safety team, because, most businesses didn't have someone for disease management on the payroll because no one was anticipating they would need the disease management angle. So we asked those customers what they wanted to see next. And health and safety as I'm learning over the nature of doing this business, is a strange space where technology is kind of behind where it would be in other industries. Mm. It's not somewhere that's often innovated by title entrepreneurs, because most of the innovation comes from health and safety managers who have found a unique thing within their job role that needs to be covered, and then they just do this one thing because they found a gap, i.e. a decibel reader that someone was working on, they realized it wasn't good enough, so they made a better version. But there's often not kind of flat-based innovation that doesn't just come from a small improvement in technology that already exists.
I love that your example of existing safety innovation is a decibel meter. Summarizes our profession perfectly. We've innovated. What have we made? A fucking decibel meter. Jesus. Jesus. It's very true. You're very, you are spot on. We're millennia behind when it comes to tech and safety.
Why is that? Is it because of the example I gave, or what, like, what is the reason that that's?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think one is arrogance. I think we think we're doing really well. I think there's a refusal to accept that we're not doing as well as what we think we are, particularly in countries like the UK. There's nowhere near enough debate, but like, if you look at our performance, you know, health wise, we're terrible. Like, so many people are still really poorly as a result of work, and new people getting more and more poorly every day. And we're still killing on average like 130 people a year in the UK.
Like, I have noticed that we've been looking at fatality rates as morbid as it seems recently in the UK. As such a developed country, the UK is pretty, like, it's not doing great.
Yeah, I think in the Europe, we're like, last I looked, which was a long time ago, like fifth, something like that. But still like fifth least. So you got the least, and then we kill like...
The nature of how progressive UK society has been with technology and just with general practices.
Yeah.
There's other countries that just by its complete stereotype, you'd expect weren't following the rules so much. Whereas like, I would anticipate that UK workers kind of follow rules, but then it seems to be the opposite when you look at the stats.
Well, ultimately, I think part of what you've said there is also part of the problem is that we think that safety is as simple as just getting people to follow some rules. But like, it's phenomenally complex, you know, getting companies to make risk-based decisions and not go health and safety mad, but then also not go nowhere near safety. It's like there's just dynamic space that you've got to bounce and balance all the time. And then a lot of people just thinking that it's just a load of paperwork. There's so much going on here. And then the safety profession just sitting quite pretty on their ivory tower. I'm conscious I'm slagging off my entire audience, but like most of them will be nodding their head and agreeing. We very much sat on an ivory tower for a long time saying, we're amazing, we're really good. The UK innovate led the legislation around the world in 1974. We were like one of the best, and it still is one of the best legislations in the world. And I think we just sat there and thought, yeah, we're kind of arrogantly, we're cool. And then when we go, oh, another 130 people have died this year, or we go, oh, that's just the bad companies that are not listening to us and we can't control them because they're just really horrible people. And I just don't think that's good enough. So I don't think that we have pushed innovation ourselves. And typically it's supply and demand, right? If we were demanding we needed something, people like entrepreneurs like yourself would have gone, fucking hell, look, there's this group of safety people over here that are screaming for some help. We could come up with something. But we just weren't screaming for help, I don't think, because I don't think we thought we needed it. Then
often also because the profession is, like, if you're asking for help as a health and safety manager, you're generally saying that you're not doing something right. So it like takes the ownership off you doing your job right.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of that. I think a lot of the time we positioned ourselves as the experts, which then bit us in the arse when we've gone, oh, we actually have reached the end of our expertise and we don't really know what to do now. My profession is complex and we are having a bit of identity crisis, in my opinion, or we should be having an identity crisis. And I think tech is, I mean, even interesting, there's one guy, Cameron Stevens, who's based out of Australia, who is kind of like the big pusher for tech in safety on LinkedIn and so on. You know, might be worth connecting the two of you together to have a chat. Cameron Stevens, his name is. But he's like kind of trying to really, really push tech in safety and get more people talking about it. And he made such an interesting point when I was talking to him kind of off the podcast. When he said, I find it fascinating that you've got all these academics and thought leaders that are really pushing the new safety, like the innovative ways of doing safety. Yet none of these books have a chapter on technology. And I was like, do you know what? Shit, that's such a good point. Like, even now, of the people that we think are pushing safety in a better direction, we're still not talking about tech. Like, and tech is, for me, got to be one of the things that was going to really make a difference. We work quite closely with an AI company that utilizes AI tech with CCTV and helps gather loads of data to inform boards to make better decisions, basically. But previously, how AI had been used in a similar tech, I might be mistalking here, but like, it looks to me, as a layman's point of view, a very similar technology, a different company that will use it, but used it only just to beat the worker and be like, meh, 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 the alarm's going off, and just be like, you're standing in the wrong position, meh, 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 or something like that. You're not wearing your high vis and stuff like that. Oh, we're missing a point here. Like, AI can be so good at like analyzing shitloads of data that we can't see because we're not there or whatever, and do what AI is really good at, making, spotting trends and making predictions, which fills the gap of what we're doing, except... And that's why we worked really closely with this company, like, and we try to promote their stuff as best we can, because of the way that they're utilizing AI is to help us do better at our job. And I think the relationship between us and tech hasn't been like that in the past. It's been very much like, oh, here's some tech that's just another stick that we can beat the worker with, or let's not talk about tech because we don't need it. It's a very long answer to your question.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
So where were we? So yeah, so you've gone from, in 6 weeks, you've gone from, hey, here's an idea, which like is as far as most people get. Like, everyone has ideas, right? And most people get to that point, go, oh, I've got this idea, and then one day somebody else makes that idea and you go, fucking hell, I had that idea.
Yeah, I was gonna be a billionaire.
So you got to the point where most people get to, I've got an idea, and then 6 weeks later you've gone to product, and then what, a matter of months later you're talking to some of the biggest brands in the world.
Yeah, exactly. I reckon from idea to playing with the big guys was probably a 2-month process. I mean, a 2-month process, admittedly, of like seven days a week and 16-hour days, so you're not really working. I'd be pretty good at what I do if I could do that in a normal working week.
But,
yeah, it was chaos, but it paid off. So we started building this social distancing product, sold the social distancing product, and then got to this pivotal point where we realized we were still admittedly making good sales at this point, but we knew that the risk of the business continuing was so dependent on government guidelines. And then even when we started selling into international markets, as the UK government were sort of turning off the COVID gates, so to speak, we were still finding the same obstacles, that like, we'd start selling in a different country, and then you'd realize that after a number of months, that country was starting to, sales were starting to tail off, and you kind of move, and then eventually you got to this point where we were like, well, there's no more sales. But all the same, we were having these conversations with customers in about September 2020, to be honest. It was about 6 months into the sales cycle of that social distancing product, so maybe 2 years ago, which makes me realize that I've slowed down at the speed of which I work. I went from 6 weeks to the product, now 2 years later, I'm still building this concept. So we asked those customers what they wanted to see us do next. Like 80, 90% of those customers were health and safety managers, as they said. So they wanted something that would address health and safety. Now, we weren't too sure what that would really mean. Like, we looked at building PPE, we looked at making kind of infrastructure for construction sites or manufacturing sites, like lockers and that sort of thing, just because we had all these contacts in health and safety. But after ideating, we've arrived back at the fact that we were going to build a wearable. I mean, we did it well before. We managed to build a wearable and an app, and it all worked. So we thought, yeah, let's do the same thing again. The real differential that we found, however, in that research was that lots of safety technology it's not an integrated system. You'll often address one thing or one aspect of safety, whether that's building occupancy or fire logging or decibel reading or machinery proximity or certification checks or whatever it might be. But they're all single feature pieces of technology that address just this one thing. And often it will be, if it's a big team of health and safety professionals within an organization, there'll be kind of one person with responsibility for each of those attributes.
Yeah.
So to a holistic view that kind of the team can operate together and assign data to individuals and that sort of thing. So to cut a long story short, we realized that we were going to build a wearable that would address multiple features as well as any other player on the market. Because, I mean, inevitably, it's not heavy tech to create something that manages decibels. Like, of course, there is some technology behind it, but the real beauty in the data is when you can address if one hazard is more prevalent than another by seeing them on the same view, by seeing that although your decibel reading might look really high, your the frequency of high loud noise in your workplace might look really high, if you're comparing that against how often machines bash into people, when you put those two data points together, you can realize that actually you shouldn't be looking at the loud noise as your main concern. The real thing is the machine proximity, because every month that's going up by 5%, 10%. There's somewhere training's amiss or some employee who's skewing all the data and all that sort of stuff. So this new wearable that we're building is a multi-feature safety wearable. It will be worn by all employees within, for the most part, manufacturing construction. But I mean, we'll go after other markets, but we really have that as our focus at the beginning. It will alert for, there's about 15 different hazards on the device. It will tell the employee at the time, like, watch out, there's a forklift behind you, or put your PPE on, there's loud noise, or you're in the control room, have you got the certificate to be here, or you're stepping onto site, are you wearing your steel cap boots? Or, yeah, I mean, I could tell you through every single feature, but we'd be here for a little bit. So what it does is it, in real time, alerts that hazard. And then we have a reporting dashboard that analyzes all these variety of hazards. It gives you data to say that trips and falls were up 10% yesterday. Is there an issue with your surfaces? Or it will tell you that there were 5 machine collisions. Like, do you need to address the mapping within your warehouse?
Yeah.
So it ends up being a data-led wearable for us is really the means of data collection, not data collection for SpaceBand, but SpaceBand as a company have no benefit kind of in that data. The data is completely put by the customer, but the fact that it can report all the data and you can view everything holistically means that you can make informed decisions rather than just kind of taking guesswork between individual pieces of technology.
Love that. Love that.
Make it clear that the use of computer vision is because that you want to learn about patterns of behavior in parts of workplace to improve the work environment. Then you will not use it as a disciplinary tool unless there are exceptional circumstances. Consult employee reps. Give them a distraction of what CV will do, CV being computer vision, as well as reassuring them. They will have great ideas about how it can be used to protect people. They're just two of the rules in the white paper that Protex AI have done for building trust within the workplace when we're using computer vision AI. So computer vision is like the AI tech that goes onto your CCTV that Protex AI do. And one of the biggest issues that we've got is that we've just got a culture of where we think, not just as a company or you, like, just I think everyone, a majority of people have a culture where you think you're only doing this to spy on me. And that's the problem when we've got predominantly a lot of these AI type data building type tech innovations. And that was one of the things that stood out when we spoke to Protex AI. We had quite a lot of these computer vision people come to us at Rebounding Safety being like, oh, can we talk about, you know, talking to your audience and stuff like that. And one of the first things we would try and get out of them is like, how are you using this? And the second we got a hint of like, you're using it to punish the worker, we didn't want it. It was just being used as another stick to beat the worker. And the thing that stood out with Protex is that they didn't want that to happen. And they've kind of put that, this kind of whole ethos into a white paper, which is a great piece of information. It's free of charge. You can download it from the website. It's called AI's Role in Promoting a Proactive Safety Culture. All about kind of building that data and becoming more proactive. But one of the first things we need to do is increase trust. That's why I really liked their kind of list of rules essentially to build trust. Like, this is how we're going to use it, and this is that framework we're going to operate within. So you can find the link in the description below for that white paper. It's not massive, it's a relatively easy read. It's not horrendous like academic type paper. It's an easy read. It's broken down into nice chunks, and there's a lot of valuable information in there, along with a little bit of a bonus as a kind of little introduction into safety culture. So if you weren't sure as to where the word or phrase safety culture came from, it's in that paper as well. Go to the link in the description and download your paper now.
I remember when like you messaged me, and I'll have some public accountability here. You messaged me mid COVID, I think, saying like, love to come on and talk about your stuff. And I not purposely completely ignored you. And then I think you messaged me 2 years later or something, or I messaged you 2 years later, and we finally got around to having a conversation. I remember coming on the call or just before the call, I said to my wife, who runs the company with us, and she's like, who are you talking to now? And I was like, it's this guy that made this COVID tech, and it was really cool, but COVID's so last year. I'm not sure how I'm going to do this, because I proper screwed this guy over. I just accidentally ignored him when we could have really helped our audience by telling them about what you're doing, and helped you by telling our audience about what you're doing. And I proper screwed this guy over. So I owe him an apology. But then additionally, I was also worried that I'm going to get on the call and this guy's going to be like, I really want to come on your podcast and tell people about social distancing. And I'm going to have to say, mate, it's not a thing anymore. So when you kind of brought that point up yourself, I was like, oh, thank God. So there's a kind of funny story about how this kind of came about, which that's probably one of my favorite stories of this podcast so far. 4 years in? Is it 4 years? Yeah, 4 years in. That still makes me smile now thinking about that. Because I proper fucked up there.
No, it's all good. We've had a similar situation time and time again. When we started kind of making this the live pivot, when we basically I got to, I think maybe June of last year, and we were like, look, international sales of the COVID product have disappeared. We don't want to keep pushing this thing. We're just wasting our time and other people's time by outreaching.
Yeah.
When we turned off that tap and sort of repositioned ourselves with this health and safety multi-feature wearable, the amount of conversations where you're just kind of like justifying about like, no, I'm not the COVID guy. I'm not the COVID guy. Speak to me about this instead. It was really difficult those 2-3 months, because obviously you build up so many contacts. When we were effectively the COVID experts for a while within the UK, because we were the biggest COVID wearable company in the UK, and probably to the most part in Europe, because there wasn't too many. Sounds like a better accolade than it was. The reality is there aren't all that many people playing in a space that arrives in a year and then disappears a year later. But anyway.
what I did so much in what you said. There's a kind of I'm annoying myself the amount of time that I mention it, but if we did think about bringing fresh eyes in, that cognitive diversity piece, which the reason why I say that is I talk about this all the time and the listeners will be like, fucking hell, here he goes again. But I'm not going to mention the book or the theory. We'll just leave it there. The influx of COVID kind of forced you into our industry, which I'm going to put a lot of money on this. I'm pretty sure when you decided I'm going to be an entrepreneur, you never went, I'm going to go in the safety space because that's exciting, right?
This is exactly true. I never, ever thought I'd be working in health and safety. I mean, it could have been a time at some point, but I never thought an entrepreneurial venture would bring me to health and safety. I'd say that much.
Okay, so you owe me a lot of money because I won that bet. So what I love about this, really fascinating, is that you'd never set out to work in this industry, and we weren't screaming for, or the majority of us weren't screaming for, people who are not safety professionals to come over. So we're solely reliant on somebody spotting a gap, which we've kind of covered up and tried to not tell anyone there is a gap there. So COVID thrust you into our profession. which brings that fresh eyes in, which you'd spotted something which has frustrated me for so many years, and you hit the nail on the head, you probably notice me nodding my head like mad, is we've got so much tech, it's all for individual problems. So like, right, I want to speed up my auditing process. Here's a software for it. Okay, cool. I've got a problem with X hazard. Here's some tech for it. I've got a problem with X hazard. Here's some tech for it. Like, fuck me. Like, as a safety professional, I'd be in a company with like 20 different pieces of software. God knows how many bits of tools and kits, like, just to be able to freaking do what I need to do. None of it really had this holistic view of kind of what you're talking about.
You're singing to me here. The other thing that also came out of that original research is that there often isn't kind of a market leader for individual hazard stuff. Every company seems to have different ways in which they do it. There's obviously standards to what's right and what's wrong of like when stuff gets to a certain exposure level, it becomes a negative. But there's no kind of like substandard tech stack, if you like, within companies.
How they achieve the solution in a way.
Most people use a different auditing software, or they use different loan worker alarms, or they use different.
Yeah.
So like when you move, it must be frustrating as a health and safety manager when you move between jobs and you get there, you're like, oh, wait a second, I've never used any of this stuff before.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like our whole profession. Like you'd literally go into one company and be like, oh no, we don't use Notify. We use Safety Culture. Okay, fine. Or not iAuditor or whatever it's called. Oh, we don't use iAuditor. We use Notify. Oh, okay, cool. Fine. Back over to Notify we go. And then like a load of my customers have the same with like procurement style safety and procurement skills. Oh, we don't use CHADS. We use SMAS. Well, they're both the same. No, we only accept SMAS. Fuck me. Right. Okay. That is our entire industry. And do you know what? Everyone prefers, right? Like I'm a Microsoft and an Android user. I'm not an Apple user. Okay, cool. That's fine. But like, I wouldn't employ someone and be like, you must fucking use Android. You're not using Apple. Do you know what I mean? But in safety, we seem to do that. We're like, I don't give a shit what you like. You do what we do. You've hit the nail on the head there. And then they're all slightly different. So they're all trying to come up with their USP, but it's not. And again, I've mentioned a lot of companies there which are doing a lot of awesome work. Notify is doing some great work. Safety Culture, who have iAuditor, are doing some great work. When I say their USB is not enough, I'm not talking about those companies, but like as a collective, as a customer, it's like you've all got your USP, but it's very slight because you're all doing the same thing. So loan working is a prime example. There are a phenomenal amount of companies that will ring us and be like, oh, we've got this loan worker app. Okay, cool. What's different? Well, we find our device is more ergonomic than somebody else's device. And I'm just like, well, okay, but it's not really my big problem. So yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. That is very much a kind of challenge here. But there's another thing that you're doing, which I really like. So there's the data thing, which I want to come to. I'll pause that for one second. One of the big problems in kind of like the human behavioral side of safety is people will do the right. I'm kind of careful. I want to word this right. People will make more safety conscious decisions when the safety professional or the supervisor or the boss is standing there right next to them, for example, right? And more often than not, safety, as contrary to popular belief, safety is not and should not be the top priority of an organization. Nothing really should be the top priority. It's dynamic, right? So I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but what I really like about when you were talking about kind of how you've repurposed and restructured and kind of retargeted your product. And when you said, we went and spoke to safety professionals, I was like, oh fuck, this isn't going to be good. how much faith I have in my profession, but it's really nice that actually what you've got is something that I think we really struggle with. Is nudging people. So if you can take like nudge theory of just giving people a little prompt or a little reminder at that point in which they're interacting with the hazard is really good, because all we had previously was signage. That's all we had, like a little sticker.
Signage is good, as we've found with the contact tracing, social distancing element. It's good for a month, and then people are just like, oh, a nice painting on the wall.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and when you were kind of saying, oh, this is one thing, like, you know, I just to let you know, you've just walked into a, I don't know, hard hat zone, or, you know, your watch or your wearable is letting you know, oh, it's 80 decibels. Don't forget, you need to put your hearing protection in. Or it's not even like an order to put your PPE on. It's more like an educational point, just to let you know you're now working on a machine that has.
It also just removes that friction between the health and safety manager and, let's focus on manufacturing, the factory worker.
Yeah.
Boss is telling you every single time, like, hey, put your hard hat on. There's going to be friction there. No matter how friendly you are, it's just like, oh, who's this guy? Why is he telling me to put it on again? Like, I worked here for 40 years.
How do you envision, you may or may not want to answer this question. I work and have worked in some of my customers are working in environments where there's just hazards fucking everywhere, like just everywhere. They're in such dynamic environments and risky environments that, like, the watch will be kind of going vood, 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 vood. Do you know what I mean? Like, how are you planning on dealing with environments when there is just hazards everywhere, and stop that, the notifications becoming too much that people just switch off from it? You know, like you say about signage, like signage become such a thing that we've just put it everywhere that no one listens to it. How have you thought of that, about balancing?
Yeah, for sure.
Prioritize, I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. So the notifications are effectively muted once they've happened after a certain period of time. For different features, there's a different period in which they're muted. Because if you use the easiest way to think about this is the decibel reading zone. If you walk into a construction site and you're in a decibel reading above 85 decibels, like, it's not going to often get too much quieter. And if there's something drilling, that's going to stay dormant for an hour.
Mm.
So there's a time latency period wherein you get the notification when you enter the zone. It tells you to put your PPE on, and then, let's say, for the decibel reading, it's customizable within the mobile app how long you're going to mute that for. It's set up by default for the decibel reading, for example, it's going to be an hour. But if you're in a manufacturing site, maybe where decibels only come on at a haphazard 5 minutes for when the control room is doing X number of improvement or whatever.
Right.
But all alerts are completely customizable within the app. So we have defaults that we set up. So in theory, the device shouldn't need any infrastructure or setup requirements. When you walk out, you put it on, nothing needs to change. But obviously different workplaces have different requirements at all times. So it's easy to adapt those settings within the device, because the ideal scope for the device is that all employees will wear the wearable, but really there's no need for the employee themselves to be using the website dashboard or the mobile app.
Yeah,
of course they can do it if they want to go and access their reporting for their own safety practices. Mm-hmm. But really, odds are, if they're a factory worker, they don't care all that much about their safety performance, so they don't need to go in and check. Of course they can if they want to, but we're not building it so that it becomes a behavioral management tool for an individual. Like, it's that, as you said, it's a kind of a nudge theory premise that you remind these people to act in the right way, but we definitely don't want the device to be a behavioral management tool. We don't want employers and employees checking all their data all the time and then kind of having arguments because their performance is 10% worse than another employee's performance. It should be, because the second you have that, you'll end up getting people who refuse to wear the device because it's causing more friction than benefit. So, I mean, I haven't touched on this main point, but it's a big factor in product development that all the device's data by default is completely anonymous. For that, we've done that for a reason, so that it doesn't become this behavioral management tool.
No.
Of course, devices have their own unique ID on them, so they'll have a QR code on the back of them. So if you really want to be that line manager who's tracking every single employee, you can say that device number 6 belongs to Darren, device number 7 that belongs to Sarah. But one, space hands never hold that information, never know that information. But two, if what's stopping Darren and Sarah swapping their devices when they go on charge?
I like one of the questions for example, that AI tech I spoke about, like, one of the things that if we get a company like Protex, who we kind of partnered with on the podcast, like, they one of the first things we asked them was like, how do you want this to be used? And they said very similar to what you've just said. Like, and Dan, who we initially spoke to, was like, I don't want this to be used as like a stick just to whip people. Like, it's not a behavioral management tool. And I'm like, okay, I'm interested now. When we've had a couple of people ring us up and, oh, we've got this AI tool. Yeah. Can you like tell everyone about it? And I'm like, how do you want it to be? Well, it's perfect. You know, we can tell you who to tell off, you know, and I'm just like, nah, I'm good, thanks. So, you know, I really like that you've kind of picked that up and just said, you know what, we can use this to nudge people so that they make their own decision. And we're trying to nudge them in the way that we want that decision to go. We're not controlling that. We're still giving them that sense of, because I mean, if you look at, I think it's called something like there's this weird Piterianism or something, I don't know what it is, around nudge theory about freedom of choice. Like, you still need, because obviously it's predominantly come from marketing, so like, you can't manipulate someone, you need to like nudge them. There's a difference. I can't remember what it's called.
There's also a piece on nudge theory as a collective. So as an individual, it's behavioral, right? If you're looking at someone's data and you're telling them that you perform wrong because of this. Whereas with space bands, although the data is anonymous, you obviously, your devices are grouped together as a company. Yeah. So you can tell off the team for a 10% increase in machines hitting into each other, but you're just not picking people out of the crowd and saying like, you're wrong, making them hate you, hate the job. So you do inevitably improve performance as a collective, because you can use the data to inform those decisions, but
yeah,
you just don't end up firing someone because of a mistake they made that was completely accidental, but the data showed that they had this hazard at X time.
Yeah. No, I love that. How do you, and I know you're probably not near this position yet, but like, how do you envision trying to kind of onboard your product and service with the customers and making sure that the customers use it in the way that you envision it being used? Is that a challenge that you thought about yet? I know you're probably not at that point yet. I know you're still in, is it product design stage that you're kind of in at the moment still? Or
product development's underway. So, I mean, we have thought about this for sure. The one thing that we have to really get right in the messaging is that we're not a tracking tool, although it kind of almost seems like it because we have this holistic data set. We're really not a tracking tool. That it's got to be made very clear to the end user, who's inevitably the employee, that this is not us monitoring you, or it's not your line manager monitoring you. It's just something there to keep you safe. It's to do lots of the safety checks for you in a way. But if you're completing your work, you're not going to be checking your environment around you every 5 seconds. This device is. So this device is effectively keeping you alive in the worst instances, because it's doing these background checks. It's doing these background checks without the need for any internet connection, without the need for any infrastructure. It's just kind of searching for you in case something is happening that you're not aware of, whether that be, yeah, like temperature being too high, or the loud noise coming up, or there being a forklift about to impale you.
So does it need, so obviously you've got the wearable, so like I assume, is it like a watch, the same as this, but yep, so kind of like a watch style. And then do you need like something else on, say, like the forklift, for example, so that the watch can pick up that the forklift is coming?
Genius. Yeah. So yeah, there's a
I should be
yeah, so there's a thing, we call it a beacon. So you put a beacon on all your vehicles. That could be a forklift, could be a digger, could be a robot doing the picking and packing for you in a warehouse.
Yeah.
You also put a beacon on the entry points for the dangerous areas. So, for example, if you need a zone where you need a certain certificate to be able to enter the control room, or you need whatever, you want to track your exposure in a certain part of a warehouse, if there's gas or certain materials in there, you put these beacons at various points. Yeah. And then then for that we can track the location, because the device itself doesn't have any GPS on it. Again, we've done this for product adoption and lack of friction. Right. We don't want employees to feel like they're being tracked when they're going on smoking breaks or going to the bathroom. Yeah. We don't want one employee to feel like they're being monitored by a Black Mirror-esque power. Everything is, again, like I said, to reiterate, it's all anonymous. There's no tracking. We definitely want to keep that in the pillar, because that's what gave us the success of the social distancing device. When we asked our customers what they wanted to do, they said they loved that about us. That's why they picked up us over competitive products. We want to definitely hold that through. Because the other thing with a lot of safety tech, when we were doing that research, is lots of them are tracking tools. Lots of the lone worker systems are, like, they're monitoring people and telling people off when they're not checking back in.
Yeah.
And yeah. maybe this is why technology has been slow in health and safety, because lots of times the upkeep is too trackable. It's too trackable, and then it becomes a behavioral management.
I think it's a nature in which we have behaved as a profession for a long time. Like 90% of professionals nowadays will tell you, like, oh, you know, safety's not about finger wagging, but it has been for a very long time. It has been for a very, very long time. And that extended into the technology and software and so on that we utilized. It was very much like, you can keep an eye on your employee and find out where they are at any point in time. And also it manages lone working. You know, it might not have been sold like that, but it did that. So very much, I mean, we used to, when I was in the NHS, we didn't, again, I'm not a great advert for lone working devices. I know a couple of them and they do good work. They really do. But we used Snapchat when I was in them. So we just buddied up. So we all had a buddy and we used to travel around the country loads. And we have a buddy assigned to us, and basically we had access to their diary so that we could see where they planned to go. And but this how we managed lone working was, when you got on site, you took a Snapchat photo of the sign of, like, I'm at X hospital. And then when you got home, you took a Snapchat of your front door. And that was it. So it didn't take up any memory on my phone or their phone. It just come up on my thing. All right, David's is home now. Cool. And if I'm like, I'm home, hang on a minute, I've been home like 2 hours. David should have been home by now. I'll give David a ring. Hey, David, are you all right? Yeah, I'm stuck in traffic. That's all it is. I'm alive, but I'm stuck in traffic. Okay, cool. Didn't answer his phone. Then I activate a process. I'm like, funny thing is, we had a very young team. It was the oldest person in the team that came up with Snapchat. He was, his name was David, and he was, I don't know, maybe in his 50s, 60s, oldest guy in the team, but he loved Snapchat. And we were sitting in a meeting, how do we manage lone working? He was like, well, we can just use Snapchat. And I was in the room.
Some of these things, it's just often the easiest way.
Honestly, it was nuts. And I'm in the room. I was like, I don't know, a 26, 27-year-old at the time. No, I'm probably a bit younger. And I'm like, why did I think of that? Like, I'm the kid in the room, like, that should have been my idea, not his idea. And everyone was kind of like, and initially the company were like, no, I don't like that. But like, our boss was like, fucking love it, go with it. And that was it. So we tried to push that to the other sector, because we were a massive safety team. So we tried to push that to the other regions, and they didn't like it. But it was simple, low cost. Well, no cost. It was completely free. Simple. But yeah, it was anyway, completely off piece story there. But yeah, it's just use Snapchat.
I'm going to can all the product development, just build everything around Snapchat.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, everything around Snapchat. Honestly, I'll never forget that. I was sitting in that meeting just being like, you're near retirement. How have you come up with this? Like, but yeah, he just loves Snapchat. So he was like,
who's he messaging on there? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. he just used to take photos of like his dinner and send it to the team and be like, hey, this is what I'm having for dinner. And then one day he was like, oh, we could use this for lone working. I was like, genius, absolute genius. But yeah, no, I really like that. So and the next part of it, which I think is a really important part, is that data gathering piece, isn't it? So what kind of data? So basically, I mean, how I'm looking at this is that I can now see, I got an employee base of, I don't know, 100 people over a factory or two factories. I can now see how many times people are interacting with a forklift, how many times people are interacting with this hazard or that hazard. I can literally see the interactions between human and hazard in a way, kind of dynamically.
Yeah, very dynamically. So like the safety features we're tracking, at least within the first iteration, we have a few more in the pipeline, but yeah, within the first iteration are going to be machine and person collision. That could be, like I said, a forklift, could be a car, could be a robot, could be whatever.
Yeah.
Access zones. So the likes of walking into a control room or the likes of standing in an exposure limit gas chamber or whatever it might be. Lone working. PPE prompts for certain areas, the first example being wearing a steel cap boots when you walk on site on a construction site. building occupancy logs, so we could track exit and entry to building. Obviously, because the device has proximity, you can see if someone leaves an exit zone, therefore the building has one less person in it. And the benefit of that, in the likes of a fire roll call,
yeah,
you can say like, oh, we've got 200 people in the building right now. You're doing the roll call. Oh, we've got 200 people there. Cool, we go out for now. But there's no real technology to come on to that in the same kind of, without tapping an old school RFID card.
Can I pause you on that one? I got a question on that one, because fire is like a big area for us. And evacuation and roll call is a freaking pain in the ass. Like, the majority of people do it shit. And the majority of people hate when I tell them the roll call is a horrendous way to manage it, because what if Bob's just popped out for lunch and you forgot Bob popped out for lunch, which is very easy. Where's Bob? That's right. Did he go out for lunch? I don't know. Isn't he on holiday? I thought he was he just got back.
I got the fix for that.
Yeah. And you're like, is he here? So my question would be that you kind of fix that. Could it also, I don't know, I'm thinking out loud, and I don't want to give away any ideas that you may or may not have, but could it also tell me if Dave is in the building and where Dave is in the building, so that I could tell the fire service, you need to go here, because there's, it might not say it's Dave, but it says it's device six, which is somebody.
Yes and no. So the reason it's a yes and no is that the device, like I said before, doesn't have any GPS trackability.
Yeah.
So you can't see that Dave is in the building. However, I was about to lead on to one of the next features is we do have a man down alarm. So the man down alarm works on it's called a Bluetooth mesh network. So it sends signals from one device to the next device, to the next device, to the next device. If someone's heart rate drops below a certain amount, or if they've had a triple fall, which is another feature, if I continued.
Oh, sure.
No, all good. No worries at all. So if Dave has fallen over or is in a high stress, as in heavy heart rate or low heart rate zone, there would be an alert sending out to everyone around him that he's in trouble. In the case of the fire call, let's say Dave hasn't been found. He's in the back of a room on fire and everyone within 50 meter, 100 meter proximity has disappeared. In this instance, yeah, the technology wouldn't stand fit because it doesn't have a location tracking tool. But you would be able to see that Dave, you would see that a device is still in the building. Admittedly, you wouldn't be able to see where it was. So yeah, there are flaws to that, of course. But
then it's that fine line between, then it becomes a tracking device, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Which you don't want. So yeah.
It's more important for us to not have the tracking device than this one instance where it might be needed. Admittedly, yeah. This is probably the worst case for the product, because yeah, that would be a fatality. But
yeah,
you can try and move all the whistles, but every now and again something gets missed.
Yeah, and that's that kind of balancing. Like, if you add that in to solve, and really that's not a problem, because I think you can tell if they're working that day, so you and you'd be able to deal with it from the roll call point of view. And like whenever we do work with customers, we tell them get rid of the roll call and do a sweep. So have allocated wardens and sweep the area before you leave. So you would pick them up on that anyway. So it wasn't a problem. My brain was like, ooh, this is interesting. My phone.
Yeah, right now the location tracking is definitely not at the forefront of our minds for the sake of getting the product to rest.
Yeah, which, like you say, it becomes a fine line, isn't it? Be like, well, hang on a minute, Dave's been at Subway for 40 minutes and he's only got a 30-minute lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Dave, I can see you went for 7 shits today and each one of them was 10 minutes long. So what's going on? Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you don't want that. You don't want that, do you? That's fascinating. There's so much to this. I really like what you were saying about the heart rate. So you can now...
Yeah, so this is... Yeah, the heart rate is... I'm kind of yo-yoing back and forth between my chain of thought, but the heart rate is a means for us to monitor stress, so we can monitor stress versus hazards. And by that, you can see if decreased in before, you can see one ambient stress rate within a workplace, not judged upon productivity, but judged upon safety. So if there's... Yeah, if every single employee is, because the decibel reading is at 90 all the time, their stress rates have gone up, you can realize that's something that you've really got to address, because people are having issues. But anyway, I'm gonna miss that point for now, because we'll dive into the safety features and then we're going to address the well-being features wherein the heart rate monitor comes into fruition.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. It's so easy when you're doing a multi-feature device to just like, this isn't the first time I had a similar situation.
We said earlier, safety is not used to this, right? We're used to very singular one problem, one solution, not multifaceted.
Yeah. What is this heavy tech stuff? But yeah, so past the building occupancy logs, we're also monitoring decibel reading, as I mentioned many times. Both decibel reading and lone working are probably going to be the lead features for this device. It was something that within our core research, people kind of uncovered as their most prevalent safety issue, it seemed. Past that, we have house checks, so hand arm vibration. The device has an accelerometer in it, so we'll obviously be able to monitor if your wrist is shaking for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It will monitor your exposure limit over time. It will monitor how often that's happened every week. For the most part, people who are using devices that need house checks, I reckon like 50% of them probably aren't wearing the devices because they've got to go and get the house check and then they've got to go and do this task that's going to take them 2 minutes. If you have a wearable device that's monitoring everything else anyway, you can track so much more exposure within that singular use case. And then the other two safety features that we're leading with are the temperature checks for both personnel and environmental. So that's ambient temperature, as in like your standard resting temperature versus the temperature fluctuation. So you could be working in a freezer warehouse. If you're exposed to cold for a number of time, it's obviously a bad thing. Similarly, hot temperatures, you're working in Oman on a building site. If you're at 40 degree temperature on your personal, like, you're obviously in some trouble. And then the beacons will also monitor ambient environmental checks. So you can then see if personal data is aligning with inside and outside using beacons. So it's a holistic approach to temperature, where most temperature scanning tools are just doing either environmental or they're just doing personal. And for the most part, no one's collecting that personal safety temperature data, because who's going to be wearing a device all day, every day to monitor your temperature, really? Okay, so I've just spoke at you for 10 minutes, but that's the safety features of the device. Now, the other thing that's really important to us is getting well-being elements brought into safety, because naturally often the two sign in together. Yeah. So we have that heart rate monitor to monitor workplace stress. If workplace stress has become a big issue and it's like the heart's kind of increasing, the device will give you breathing prompts to bring it down. Now, the employee can inevitably decide to ignore these or not ignore these, but just like a simple breathing exercise just to bring you back to a place of not being on your brain on fire. We also have stretching prompts. If you've been in an extended stationary or sedentary place, so if you've been working at a desk for 4 hours, the device will pop up saying maybe you should have a quick 5 minute stretch. Similarly, if you're working on a factory line, you're just staying in the same spot, it will tell you to have a quick walk. Obviously, we can track that by using the accelerometer and the gyroscope to see if someone's moving or standing still. I mean, as an entrepreneur, I've naturally found myself sat down at a desk for 14 hours without standing up, just because, you know, there's hectic stuff going on. So having that little reminder, you can choose to ignore it or you can choose to use it, but we thought, why not include it? The employee will inevitably want to wear the device more if we're monitoring their well-being and helping them to stay happy at work. And in doing that, they stay safer. In doing that, everyone else is happier. Past that, we have a pedometer just to track steps at work, just to give the device a use case for inevitably the end user. And we have simple "Are you happy at work?" questions and sort of safety reporting. So the device will pop up at the beginning or end of the day saying, "Are you happy at work? Yes, no." Very simple. And then the mobile app has a section where you can input safety observations. So if the floor's wet in a part of the factory, take a picture, send it in. It pops up on the dashboard of the health and safety manager, so they can get this, live eagle in the sky from their own employees by using the mobile app in like a 10-second practice, rather than having to leave whatever they're doing, go up to health and safety manager's office, knock on the door, wait for 2 minutes politely, and then say, "Oh, by the way, it's a bit wet downstairs." So yeah, the device is effectively going to, well, at least we hope, will become this holistic means of monitoring every single hazard and safety attribute in work. We're obviously not going to try and do everything and anything as we start off. We're just kind of looking at in-house safety elements in the likes of a construction site or a manufacturing site, but hopefully there will be a point where we extend all of those features to be monitoring drivers when they're out, to be monitoring gas, to be monitoring ambient oxygen levels, all this sort of stuff, whether we use our devices or we end up integrating other devices into the dashboard. Spaceplan should become a place where a health and safety manager can log in and they can see everything. They can see all the data in a very digestible way to say, lone working alarm check-ins have decreased by 5%. 5% of people aren't checking in on time. Cool, okay, let's address this for next week. Let's bring everyone in and just remind them to check in, because it's keeping themselves safe and keeping everyone else safe. If they can see that decibel readings are going up, they can either make an informed decision to buy everyone PPE for PPE headphones, or they can make an informed decision to check why everything is increasing. If there's a machine that's not working properly, or if there's someone not doing their job, closing a door where they should be. So yeah, we want it to become just an easy way to just look at data that's not heavy tech. We want it to be as simple and as digestible as possible, where you can just log in and in a minute you can see how you're performing overall. It's not a means of a test for a company. It's not a means of something that needs to be shared elsewhere. It's not a way of tracking employees. It's just a way basically to inevitably stop fatalities by using data to do that. And it's something that for some reason we've discovered no one's been doing before. You don't really know why these individuals hadn't sort of addressed this before. Mm-hmm. When the real benefit is being able to check whether one hazard is better or worse than another, and therefore inform, like I said before, PPE purchasing, or inform training, or inform if whether or not you've got the right staff on site to change your safety culture.
Wow.
There's the big sales pitch.
It's impressive. I mean, there's a skeptic in me that's like, nah, I can't do all that. but there is like, and ultimately from what this feels like and looks like from the employee side, kind of like a smartwatch, I assume, is it?
Yeah, like a smartwatch, but a smartwatch that's not interactive to distract from work. Like, we don't want it to have a calendar or emails or messaging on it. It just is a safety tool. Like, yes, it will ask, are you happy at work or are you alone working? Yes, no. But besides that, there's really no interaction from the user. They can check their temperature. They can check the time. But it's just there as a reminder to keep them safe. And to be perfectly honest, although it seems very strange, but even if the device didn't perform, we're perceiving that just the fact that the employee is wearing something reminding them about safety, they become more conscious about their safety in a strange way. Like, it's almost a reminder that
it's bringing it back into what I like about it is one of the biggest problems we have in safety is we blanket approach a lot of things. So, for example, you might go to a construction site. We'll have to don all the PPE for every possible hazard the second you step on site. You know, so, okay, cool. And then we've worked with roofers in the past that are working on the roof, and they're like, why am I wearing a hard hat? Like, yeah. There's literally nothing above me than a bird. So potentially bird shit. And that's about it. So like, even though I did have a bird crap on my car the other day, and Jesus Christ, I thought it cracked the windscreen. It was huge and it just went slap. And I was like, oh my God. But yeah, anyway, it was like, It gives the company, the professional potential to be able to focus their mitigations and their risk management tools to where it's applicable. So, for example, it could be like, right, you can tell you're in X zone now. So you don't need to wear your hearing protection. And I know it's the other way around, but it enables us to be like, because we're nudging them when they go into the area where they need X, we don't have to blanket rule it for the whole site. So hearing protection is a good example. The reason why I kind of use that one as well is because the legislation, or at least the guidance, the ACOP is quite clear in it. It doesn't want you to, the HC don't want you to blanket rule it. So they don't want you to blanket rule it. They actually tell you to be very specific and targeted on the areas in which you need hearing protection. But every site will blanket rule it because it's easier to manage, because it's hard to nudge people to put the hearing protection on in that moment, in the right space at that time, just by that machine or by this X or whatever. Instead of, it's much easier when they clock in, just get them to put the hearing protection on.
Sure.
And I think what this gives us the ability is that nudge, giving us the ability to nudge them gives us less excuses to blanket roll for me, which I think is a really good thing.
Sure. And with the decibel ring specifically, we're even looking at like bringing PPE headphones that have a Bluetooth signal so we can know whether or not the employee has them on or doesn't have them on.
Right, yeah, nice.
But yeah, we're not trying to walk before.
Yeah, but walk before you can run, kind of thing. But yeah, that's there's so much potential to this. But I love it, for me, it's just that it gives us a really good case study for let's get people who are not in safety to try and help us solve our problems, because somebody will come in and look at this holistically. To your point, like, you're coming up with several singular solutions. Why not have one solution for everything? But it does blow my mind that a little watch on your wrist can do that much stuff. That's
when I explain it, it seems like it's very heavy tech, but it's really not. Like, if you break down the features and think about them pragmatically, like, a decibel reader is just a microphone.
Yeah.
Like, a trip and fall alert is just an accelerometer and a device going, oh, we've fallen down, oh, we haven't picked back up. Like, it's simple. It's just collating them together that's a little bit more complicated. But yeah, this is why we've been working on this for about 2 years and we're almost ready to launch it.
Nice. Wow. So how do people, if people are like, oh my fucking God, get this in my factory, what timeline? I know you say like you're nearly ready to launch. Have you got like a target, we're going to be ready on X, or are you not near that yet?
Yeah, no, we're near that. So we think we're going to launch the device in January of next year.
Nice.
Yeah. So the best way to start those conversations is by reaching me by email, which is ronan@spacebands.com. Or if you just visit the spacebands.com website, if you can't spell my name or forgotten what it was by the time I said it 10 seconds ago, just visit www.spacebands.com and there's a contact form on there and you can get in touch.
Thank you, Steve. Well, we're going to put your email address and the website in the description anyway, so that people can get that, mate. But I'm mega keen to see where this goes, and I will be telling people about it for sure. Really, really interesting, mate. Thank you very much for what you're doing, and keen to see where it goes. But thank you for coming on.
No worries. I'm equally keen to see where it goes.
Okay, peeps, hope you enjoyed that. We've put Spacebands, Ronan's, and all the LinkedIn's and stuff in the description below. So go check out all of their contacts if you want to learn some more as well. If you need some help and support with improving safety and human performance on site, then we would love to work with you and help you rebrand safety. So you can go and check riskfluentltd.com or email me, James@riskfluentltd.com. Catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.